Hello, everybody. You may be listening on Facebook, you may be watching YouTube, you may be on iTunes or Spotify listening to this as a podcast. We are here in this live conversation as Third Space Coaching, and this is Turning Towards Life. This week, I'm so aware, after having met another group of people through our Foundations programme that we held earlier on in the week, that more and more people are listening because we are a podcast, and people are listening on the tube, riding their bikes, doing various things, because people can now take this with them and not just watch and listen when it's live on a Sunday morning. So I'm really appreciating that that's happening. And one of my favorite stories is that somebody cycles along the towpath and listens to us while cycling along, using their mobile phone. And I felt so kind of surprised at this and grateful, Justin, to you for being able to know what on earth to do to make this into a podcast. And it feels like just this week I've had, you know, the story of the bike, and then somebody WhatsApped me yesterday and said, I forwarded your last week's talk on being wounded to a couple friend of mine, and they listened to it, and it's really changed things for them. And she wanted to appreciate how this podcast, this recording, these topics are touching people beyond what we know. And so I feel very glad of that anybody in the world can receive some kind of, I don't know what it is, being joined in their life by what we're doing. And so I just want to extend this welcome to anybody new, to anybody who's been here since the beginning, to anybody who's with us. We really, really appreciate that you're listening and that you're here with us. And this is a great joy to bring Justin's source this week, this poem by Yehuda Amichai. And one of my favorite topics is being right. So I'm very, very excited to get into this.
Thank you, Lizzie. Of course, it's wonderful hearing everything that you have to say. And I've been thinking quite a lot over the last week since we started the podcast part of this, how we might start to introduce each episode in a way that would make sense to somebody who was joining partway through. Because, of course, if you've been following us for a while on Facebook, or you come to our website or YouTube, there's lots of explanation. And when I woke up this morning, I ended up reading for a little while an article about Instagram and YouTube and Facebook and what it takes to create the kind of podcast life that many people are involved in creating, where essentially what you do is you make one life for online, and then you have your other actual life that you live behind the scenes. And particularly a lot of the people who are, you know, sort of really big names in a certain kind of podcasting and Instagramming are doing that. It was a wonderfully tender article about what it takes. And you and I were talking, Lizzie, last week after we finished Turning Towards Life about what this is. And one of the things that I really came to appreciate as I was reading the article was how we're trying to do the opposite, which is to do something that is, in a way, sort of resolutely lo-fi instead of hi-fi, and is absolutely real and unrehearsed. Mm. And you made a very good point that I wanted to bring in for everyone this morning, which is it's a very purposeful practice of ours here to be having a conversation between us that's unfolding over many, many weeks, that isn't one of us interviewing somebody else, but is actually arising, what we're talking about arises from the midst of a relationship. And that in a way is how all human life happens in the end. So I'm very pleased to be doing this deeply off trend project together. So welcome from me also to everyone who's joining us in the multiplicity of forms that we have for this work now. So I chose the source this week by an Israeli poet whose name is Yehuda Amichai, whose work I have loved for a long time. And this poem has been with me for a long time, and it's short and sweet and raises lots for us to talk about, I know. And just before I read it, for any of you, whether you're with us now live or listening to us or watching us later, you can always find the sources as well as the archives of all of our previous conversations, the video archives at least, at the website turningtowards.life, which is from where I'm reading this now. So this is a poem called The Place Where We Are Right. From the place where we are right, flowers will never grow in the spring. The place where we are right is hard and trampled like a yard. But doubts and loves dig up the world like a mole, a plough. And a whisper will be heard in the place where the ruined house once stood.
The place where we are right. From the place where we are right, flowers will never grow in the spring. The place where we are right is hard and trampled like a yard. But doubts and loves dig up the world like a mole, a plough. And a whisper will be heard in the place where the ruined house once stood.
Short and sweet after a number of weeks where we've had much longer sources to bring. Mm-hmm. So I want to say a little bit about how this poem appeared for me as something to bring for this week. So I have two different ways of reading this poem, at least two different ways. So one way is the way that seems to me to be the obvious way, and bizarrely I think there's going to be no way of talking about this poem without getting into sort of loops, twists and turns of a sort of kind of complexity, because there's a part of me, Lizzie, that wants to read this poem because I know that it is right, that it is wrong to be right. Like the part of me that goes, yes, there's a poem here which will show me and show everyone that when we get rigid and when we get fixed and when we get, you know, so certain of our position, that that's the place where flowers will never grow and where things are hard and trampled like a yard. And I agree in so many ways with the premise of this poem. It's so beautiful and so necessary. And I felt so right about the choice of the poem that even laying out Yehuda Amichai's proposition felt to me like a kind of certainty. So I started to realize that it's possible to feel right about almost anything, including the certainty that feeling right is a problem. And then as I've settled into this poem a little bit more deeply, I've seen that it touches into something that's very tender for me also, which is how often I feel like I have no grasp on what's right. I'm so full of doubts and so full of uncertainties and so full of who am I and what am I really up to and does anything I stand for really add up to anything, and all of these incredibly self-defeating, self-undermining positions, that I can read a poem like this and think, well, I'm full of doubts. And they don't feel like they're digging up the world like a mole or like a plough. They feel like they're solidifying something. And this is where I get into this sort of pickle about that sometimes even my doubts are a way of trying to be right. Like I'm so right, I'm so sure about my own doubtfulness that I'll cling onto it and hold onto it like it's the truth about the world. So this poem, I feel like, is this very simple poem is really messing with me, because every place I find myself in, it wants to uproot it. And as you were reading, I realized, I suppose I saw in a new way that both of my positions that get me into big trouble and often get people around me into trouble, which are both versions of being very right about something, the thing that they miss is love. And so when I'm reading this poem this morning, what really touched me so deeply is when you read, "But doubts and loves dig up the world like a mole and like a plough." And that feels properly revelatory for me this morning as we're embarking on this conversation.
So I've only lived with this poem for a day or so, and I feel like my mind hasn't been twisted yet.
Wonderful. You probably can do with at least one person who hasn't been twisted
around.
It feels
like I feel really... I really hear you on your, you know, the backwards and forwardsness of the right thing. And for the more, I don't know what the word is, I'm not kind of being self-deprecating, but I don't have a, like, I think I'm quite dyslexic. So to do some logical thing with this is like, one of the things that's not available to me. So I kind of can't twist it in lots of ways because my mind doesn't really work like that. And so, and I guess living with it for a day is different than living with it for a while, which sounds like you've done. What I appreciate is that the front piece of the poem is different to the back piece of the poem, and that it feels like a really simple opening into an undoing. Like, I know so well in me what it feels like to be in the hard and trampled yard. I know my righteousness is a dead end, you know, whether it is about the doubt or whatever. I can feel it as I read this poem. I'm like, oh yeah, I can't feel that anything is fertile there. It doesn't feel open, it doesn't feel soft, it doesn't feel like life itself. It feels like I've reduced something. And I love how simple this poem is to make it so obvious that my right place, however much I cling to it, is not going to give me what I want. Because of course, the words love and whisper are kind of appealing to me in a much, much different way. And to have this place of beginnerness again and again and again about being right, and this poem, just the shortness of it, the directness of it, just feels like a really beautiful, obvious invitation to let my rightness be questioned, to let my rightness not be the place that it ends ever, but to see my rightness as maybe a way to something else, that there's something beyond it, there's something more expansive than it, there's something less constricting, less smallening of me, of my perception of the world, of my feeling, that opens and digs things up. And I was doing some gardening yesterday, and I was doing really unsophisticated gardening, and I was using a pair of kitchen scissors because I didn't have a spade, because I'm not a very sophisticated gardener. And so I was just like digging the soil around and loosening it, and I realized when I was digging it how much life gets into the soil by ploughing it, which I think that's what a plough does. It kind of goes under the soil, and the surface changes because air gets in it, and space gets greater. And it feels like that's a natural phenomenon in the soil, as exists in a human being, in our ego structures and our relationships, that if we don't disturb the hard parts of us, the yard, if we don't disturb the yard with some conscious disrupting of the tightness of the determined clinging, we are left with a hard yard where the things don't grow. And of course, things that grow are beautiful and life-giving. And where we have love and disruption and digging up, then so much can come. But when it's all sealed and all buttoned up, there's some kind of stagnant fixedness that doesn't allow flow or air or openness. And so I'm just really appreciating and in this moment realizing that I read this poem and the second half in a way didn't make much sense to me. And as I'm talking about it now, I can kind of feel about the way this happens. And I'm still not sure about the last paragraph of "and a whisper will be heard in the place where the ruined house once stood." Because all I can feel is like, oh, I'm interested in that and I don't really know what it means.
I have something going on. It's lovely listening to your way of talking about it. And the way you have of expressing the feel of this poem, the bodily heartfelt feel of finding a way to let go or soften our own rigidity and our uncertainty, and how it's like, I was thinking when you were talking about ploughing your garden with your scissors, which is such an excellent image, how it's a good job your garden's quite small.
I know.
My goodness. Must be in for a very large job. How ploughing turns what was underneath onto the top side is one of the things that it does. But the other thing, I think you said this, is it lets air in, it ventilates. And I can feel my own letting air in as you're talking, my own softening and my own expanding. And the first thing that you said, Lizzie, was to do with what feels properly alive. And I think you're really onto something, both, of course, about the poem, but something that's so important about human life that I was, in my sort of twisty, convoluted way, also trying to say something about my own experience of this, which is that for me, even doubting can be a rigid, hard shell. You know, like when you go out into the garden after a hot day and the top of the earth is all crusted over, and you dig underneath it and it's moist and cool. And so I think it's probably the case that almost anything that we take up in our own inner world, let alone what's between us, can become this something from which nothing will grow, that's hard and trampled, even what appears to be doubt. And that what you and Yehuda Amichai are inviting us into in the way that you're speaking is, see, this is something that we touched on last week and I think was really beautifully implied in what you just said, which is it's not, we have to really find a way of letting go of the either or-ness of everything. You know, either I'm right or I'm wrong. That to doubt is to abandon myself. All of these positions are ones which get us stuck and rigid. And there's something much more life-giving, which is to hold both poles. And that's where flowers can grow, in this tenderness, like between the poles in myself, let alone the poles between me and you. If we're having a big disagreement about something, I think it's the same thing. And one of the ways that we know about it, one of the ways that we can tell what's going on, I think sometimes quite reliably, is to feel into what it feels like to be in the conversation with another or the conversation with ourselves. Does this feel like somewhere that love has a place of showing itself? Does it feel like turning over the hard crust to the moist, cool something below that's fertile? Does it? And I know that when I get myself into the most trouble in my own inner dialogue or in relationship with other people, it's not like that. I'm not in a mutual discovery, uncovering together of something. I'm rigid even in my I'm wrong position, which is a kind of I'm right position, like I'm saying. And I thought that the last part of this, what I could feel was that the last part of this was starting to soften in me as you were talking, that when we finally or first allow ourselves to soften enough that we can hold two poles and see what arises between them, or we can aerate something, or we can turn something over without giving up on ourselves and without giving up on other people, then it really is like there's a whisper to listen for in a place when there had previously only been ruins, where, you know, a ruined house is silent and empty of people and empty of life. So the move when we have got ourselves stuck in being right is not only softening and calling into question what we've been holding on to very hard and letting ourselves open. It's also a kind of listening.
Yeah.
Because a whisper can only be heard when we're quiet enough.
Yes.
And we have to wait for it and let it come our way, rather than, this is what I do when I'm in difficulties, grasp. If I grasp something, I'll grasp. And I can never find what's alive in that. It's arid.
Oh, you've just given me an idea. I'm going to try and say it. So as you were talking, what I saw was that the ruined house, one way of seeing this could be that the ruined house is our righteousness. And so where the ruined house of righteousness once stood, there would be a whisper in that place, which is to turn it around and realize that in all your doubting, the rightness about doubting, the rightness about being wrong, the rightness that any of us holds, that there is gold there, that it's not part of us to be written off. And the whisper is the part that shows us that where we were and how we were dealing with it may have been the wrong way to deal with it, but it's not that we should throw that baby out with the bathwater. I.e., where is the gold in my doubting? Where is the gold in my righteousness? Like there's something in it that has essential goodness that didn't get to come forth because of the way we were being with it, the way we were communicating about it, the way that we were fixed about it. And so, like in so many things in our work, Justin, where we can see the distortion, we always know that in the distortion of something, there also lies the golden thread, that we have something there that's a gift. And because of the way that we've treated it, or it's become covered over or something, or kind of calcified, the gift kind of gets lost. But that I'm just feeling now that this poem kind of linking straight back to the beginning again, that once you've turned the soil and once you've lessened the grip, we get to see something differently, and that something gets revealed from that place at the top of the poem, which is our righteousness and our clinging, that can then be brought to the world in a different way, brought to our relationships in a different way, brought to our inner life in a different way, that we can be with that in the aeration and not in the crustiness, but then we see something completely different.
Yes, a whisper will be heard in the place, in the very place where the ruined house once stood, right there, right beneath our feet. I think you expressed that so clearly and so beautifully, and this is a theme that's been emerging between us over our last couple of conversations, has been something to do with how our ways of holding on to a particular stand or our ways of abandoning our stand, our position, I don't know what the right word is there, but the pattern of sort of self-aggrandizement, like I'm really, 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 really right, even if I'm putting myself down or trying to show you that I'm better than you or whatever it is. The pattern of that and our self-abandonment, well, if it's not that, I must be a terrible person. There must be nothing here and I should just abandon myself. How flawed that is, how much of us that it misses out. And it struck me whilst you were talking, not only do we do this to ourselves, we also do this so easily to others. So if you and I are in a big disagreement, one of the ways that I can go to try and resolve it is to have you be the one where there's nothing, there's no whisper to be heard in your place. I'm simply need to show you that I am the one who has everything. Or the converse, you know, okay, well, so I'll just abandon my position and I'm terrible and I'm nothing and I'll submit. And neither of those bring us into dialogue with anything that can be really true, and neither of us bring us into relationship. And so the being human together, I think I'm just saying back something that you said, but another way, but it feels so important, involves both finding ways of having our own inner lives and our lives between us be fertile and aerated and letting go enough, but also honoring the goodness that's here too, in amongst everything else. So it doesn't help to polarize ourselves to go, well, of course I'm just a through and through good person with the truth, because that ignores so much of what it is to be a human being. But it doesn't help to polarize in the opposite direction either. Right in the middle of the ruins is also where the whisper can be heard. It seems to me that in a way this is what we keep on landing upon, is wanting to find a way of honoring the richness and complexity, the light and the shadow of being a human being, and facing it and turning towards it and still trusting that something, well, still is the wrong word, deeply trusting that something loving and life-giving can come when we're prepared to look at all of it without categorizing, without excluding.
Yeah, it's having the effect on me of I'm feeling really, really happy to know and feel the possibility in the space that you're articulating now, that there is miles in between two positions that we could explore, and you could have your view and I could have mine, and there's a big massive field between us that we can walk through. And how interesting and kind of compelling that field feels, way more than my position. I mean, my position feels like a teensy little kind of smidgen of possibility. And then when I feel into the space between two places, and that we could walk there and we could see what's in the space between us, it feels like a whole different spacious kind of world.
It says something very important about, I think, how important it is to be in relationship and how important it is to be in conversation with human beings, and that our hurry that we find ourselves in, one of the characteristics of our culture is what a hurry we seem to be in to have everything sorted and to have everything answered and to have things be right. But what's life-giving and true and kind and loving and filled with possibility doesn't usually come that way. Once in a while it does, but very, very often we have to do exactly what you're saying, which is to walk into the ruins together, or to walk into the field together and see what's there and really be prepared to look together.
Yeah.
And that will take our time.
Yeah. And we don't have to abandon our position. Like, that can be in the field too.
Well, it has to be.
It's just not the only place that we stand.
Yeah.
We leave it there as a place to come back to if we wish. And we walk around and see whether we really want to stand there.
Mm. I'm going to read this, going to do an unusual turning towards life thing. I'm going to read this once more as a way of us finishing.
Yeah.
And then say to everyone, thank you so much for being with us, and we will really look forward to being back with you next week. The place where we are right. From the place where we are right, flowers will never grow in the spring. The place where we are right is hard and trampled like a yard. But doubts and loves dig up the world like a mole, a plough. And a whisper will be heard in the place where the ruined house once stood. Thank you for being with us, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
See you soon. Bye-bye.